Hello, you're listening to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Jo Fay. What happens to a person's mother tongue when they move abroad? Do they start to forget the language they grew up speaking? Or can tight-knit communities keep a language going, even when it's far away from home?
Im Herz in der Schweiz, aber daheim bin ich in Amerika.
My heart is in Switzerland, but I'm at home in America. It could be the story of many migrants, but it's the voice of one Swiss woman whose interviews are helping researchers based in Lausanne. They're finding out how Swiss languages and dialects change when people emigrate to the United States.
So, my name is Anita Auer, and I'm Professor of English Linguistics at the University of Lausanne.
Anita wanted to find out what the effect of moving abroad has on the different Swiss languages.
It's not so much about how language changes, or what we are interested in finding out is what really happens to the languages once you move abroad. And we're particularly focusing on Swiss migrants, and that means Swiss migrants from different parts of Switzerland, so not only Swiss German speakers, but also Swiss French speakers, Swiss Italian speakers, possibly Romance speakers. What happens to them when they move to North America? And in North America, you have got English and French if you go to Canada.
The research involves recent and older migrants. She spent some time looking for people of different generations, including first and second, and wondered if there was a difference between people born in Switzerland and those who've learnt a dialect from their parents. One of the questions they had was about what reasons were behind people switching to different languages.
We try to find out what are the reasons for shifting to another language, for instance. Or if you keep the original language, what does the language look like after several years, after several generations? Do you keep in touch with people at home or not? And what happened in the past when you didn't have, for instance, Skype or FaceTime? How did you keep in touch? Did you write letters? And what kinds of letters would you write then? Would you write in dialect? Would you write in a standard language? So these are some of the questions that we are interested in.
Anita travelled to the US in November to meet some of the Swiss who moved abroad. Finding the right people to talk to was very important, and she teamed up with academics in different countries to help her.
We are interested, as I said, in the past as well as in the present. So what we did is we got in touch with people from Wisconsin particularly, and this is because we have a partner over there, the Max Kade Institute and the University of Wisconsin, where we work with some colleagues on this project. These colleagues also had some contacts already, and we got in touch also with the Swiss Center of North America that is in Nuclearas. And in the end, we ended up with very different people. So some people were actually third or fourth generation, other people and elderly. Other people were first or second generation. So the first generation would have left Switzerland in the early 20th century. And now their children would be around 70 years old.
She's collecting data from all kinds of Swiss speakers in North America, in places such as Wisconsin and New Glarus. In the latter, street names are written in German and English, to give you a better idea of the high presence of German speakers there.
And also the shop signs are in High German. So you've got Blumenladen, for instance, and you've got the Nuclearis Hotel, with a Ticino Pizzeria. So you do have all of those, you know, Swiss names everywhere.
The research is a long-term project, which has just started. And so far, she and another researcher have spoken to 14 people. They interview willing participants and look at historical data.
So essentially, we interview people on the one hand, and we carry out sociolinguistic interviews. So we want to find out a lot about their lives, about their migration stories or the migration stories of their ancestors. And we try to find out how they feel about Switzerland and their Swiss identity. So we have questions like, what is Heimat for you? So what does that mean for you? Or how do you feel? Do you feel more American? Do you feel more Swiss? Or do you actually feel very strongly about the home canton that you're from?
A first-generation Swiss-German speaker explained what Heimat means to her. It can be literally translated as home. The woman being interviewed was born in 1927.
Ich weiß, wo sie sich aus der Schweiz, wo sie ja ja als Schweizer Programm gehabt.
After I came here, a Swiss radio program once interviewed me and asked, if you're really honest, where do you really feel at home? Then I said, my heart is in Switzerland, but I'm at home in America.
The same woman then explained how her children use dialect.
Was das Lustige ist,
The funny thing is, you know, my husband came from Grindelwald. Kathy, my daughter who lives in Canada, took on his dialect. She speaks pure Grindelwald German, but the boys, they speak like me.
Alexandra Durungs is working with Anita on the project and went with her to the States. She told me that one of the places they visited, New Glarus, has a very strong Swiss identity. Glarus, of course, is a place in Switzerland.
You know that once upon a time there were many Swiss people, many Swiss settlers. Like, you can literally see the history. I feel it's something that's also taught in schools, like, this is who we are, and so on and so on. And even if you have no ancestors that are Swiss, but you grew up there, you still know about Switzerland, if you want to or not.
But just why is it so important to stay in touch with your roots, whether that's through knowing your history or speaking the same language as your grandparents? I put the question to Anita.
Everybody needs roots to hold on to, and very often those roots we find through languages, through dialects, through customs. And that's simply something that we need as human beings, something to hold on to in order to lead a good life. And as I said, you know, now that the world gets bigger, the roots become more important to us. And what you notice, for instance, I think that you notice it in Switzerland, you notice it in other places, that more and more people start wearing traditional costumes again, for instance. This seems to be one way of showing your roots again.
Music is another important way of keeping in touch with your heritage. Second-generation speaker the researchers interviewed struck up a tune on his Handorgeli, an accordion used in Swiss folk music. Here he describes in quite simple terms what it's like to have a strong connection to two different countries.
When I'm here, it's Madison. When I'm American, when I'm in Switzerland, I'm in Switzerland.
Schweizer or Berner?
Berner.
When I'm there, in Madison, I'm American, he says. When I'm in Switzerland, I'm Swiss. Swiss or Bernese, the researcher asks. Bernese, he replies. Anita stresses how hard migrants had to work to establish themselves, and still do today. But life in a new country isn't just about work.
But in order to kind of enjoy life as well, they had music. Mm-hmm. And that's why the yodeling, the singing, the alphorn playing is so important. It's really the music that allowed them to endure all the hardship. And so we heard stories about some of the Swiss people going to bars at the weekends and just singing for money. And whenever they told us about this, you could really see, you know, they brightened up. They were so happy talking about the past and all the singing and all the music. So in a way, also when we talked earlier on about the performance and the importance of performing identity, that's really how it started, I guess. It was when the earlier generations came. And in order to have a balance, in order to not only have hardship, music was extremely important, and that's simply what remained important. That's also what they handed down to their children and to their grandchildren.
There are also other ways the Swiss keep a strong connection to where they've come from, even if they don't live in a community surrounded by other Swiss, like in New Glarus. Anita gave me some examples.
When we arrived, the Swiss flag was in front of the house, and it was a lot larger than the American one. Mm-hmm. The number plate on the car would say mm-hmm. Bern, for instance. So people even, you know, I'm sure that not everybody is like this who does not live in a community. I'm sure not everybody celebrates the Swiss identity as much as some of the people we talk to. But I'm sure that to a certain extent, a lot of people will try to keep their identity and language or customs and traditions one way or another. They may not speak the language any longer, but they may still have their fondue set, or they still celebrate 1st of August. So I do think it is there, because we have had one interview with a person, one of the very young second generation people. He's not part necessarily of the performance, the identity performance, but at the same time, he's also involved now with the community. I do get a sense that even when you're not close to the community, you still try to hold on to your original identity in one way or another, because that's just the way you are, the way we are.
I wanted to know more about how the Swiss end up moving countries in the first place, and when they get there, what happens to their future? How does language affect their choices? Or do their choices affect their language or dialect?
Perhaps I'm wrong in this respect, but I imagine there might be quite a lot of relationships between Americans and Swiss people, and that's perhaps why they moved there. Is that true, or was it more that it was groups of Swiss people went there and stayed with Swiss people?
That's exactly it, actually. That's the second point that you just raised. So it was really lots of Swiss people simply went for betterment.
To better themselves.
Yeah, to better themselves, to get a better life. So for that reason, they've decided to move to North America. And also because it was simply difficult to find jobs in Switzerland at the time. So we're really talking here late 19th century, early 20th century. That's when a lot of the Swiss migrated. And a lot of them actually migrated and then met their partners on the ship there, or met them through on this somewhere on the street through some Swiss acquaintances. So a lot of the people, in fact, that we interviewed had Swiss partners or ancestors, or the ancestors of the partner were Swiss. So you could see that the Swiss found each other over there. So it was very rare, actually, that we've had or we talked to people who were in a Swiss-American relationship.
Or otherwise, they would marry like some other immigrant who had a similar experience of also being on the boat and then maybe being from Norway.
Yeah, because that was interesting. What we found out is that a lot of people, well, if they did not go for the Swiss, they often went for the Norwegians. And then we tried to find out why that could be the case. And very often the reason is because both of them are Reformed, so Protestant, and they both have mountains. And for some reason, that did it. So in a way, I guess they were similar in terms of mindset. And so the Swiss and the Norwegians found each other on a regular basis. That was what we found.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are we talking about kind of quite a large? I mean, how many Norwegians are involved in this scenario?
Well, that's something we don't know exactly, but that's something we can probably find out. But it is interesting. I think from the people, obviously, I think the people that we interviewed are not necessarily representative of all the Swiss migrants. But what we saw simply is that the Swiss choice was the first one. So a lot of the people actually married somebody Swiss or somebody who also had Swiss ancestors. And then we could find the Norwegian. And then the least likely combination was the one with Americans. But then American is difficult to define anyway, because most of them have got a migration history one way or another. The question is only how far back goes the migration history. But it is interesting from the language point of view, because that's exactly one of the questions that we ask is, if you get married to somebody from Switzerland, or you got married to somebody from Switzerland, what dialect do you speak? What dialect did your partner speak, or does your partner speak? What do you do at home? Do you mix dialects? Do you use English, or do you use High German, for instance, if we talk about Schweizerdeutsch? What do you do with the children? What happens to the children? And then, obviously, if you get married to somebody who does not speak your language or your dialect, well, not your language, if you get married to somebody with Norwegian ancestors, what happens then in terms of language and traditions? Do you shift then to the other language?
While Anita and Alexandra have collected a lot of information, they still have a long way to go in finding answers to these kind of big questions. You can find out more about the Swiss abroad by heading to our website, swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening, and thanks to studio technician Jakob Stoller. This has been the Swiss Info programme. I'm Jo Faye.